Cody Bellinger and Kyle Tucker could both be traded within the next 24 hours. Yes, welcome on in to First Pitch for Friday, December 13th. Your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. It's a special spooky season edition. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. You can follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. And happy Friday the 13th to you, pal.
You as well, sir.
We're gonna talk about Luis Castillo maybe getting moved. We're gonna talk about this crazy story from pitcher list about Mike Elias of the Baltimore Orioles. But first, we've got to start with the Chicago Cubs, because I think on this show, you and I both, and Christian as well, have been a little bit critical of the Cubs not being willing to jump into free agency to try to improve their roster. They're at that weird place where just about every position, maybe with the exception of catcher, is a top 10, top 15 guy. And so it's really hard to find upgrades for this team. They did a little bit of work on the pitching staff, right? But left fielder Ian Happ, right? Second baseman Nico Hoerner, Dansby Swanson at short. It's just really tough for them to find guys that are better than what they currently have. And that may be changing. They are in the middle of two separate sets of trade discussions. I believe Mark Feinsand and Joel Sherman, both MLB.com or MLB Network insiders, have reported that Kyle Tucker is on the block from the Houston Astros. We've talked about that on the show, but that the Cubs are the favorite to acquire him. I believe Mark Feinsand's the one that had that report. And the proposed deal was involved outfielder Seiya Suzuki and third baseman Isak Paredes going to Houston in the Kyle Tucker deal. I'm assuming there is going to be some more prospects, or at least one more prospect in there. It feels like just those two players is probably not the deal you're going to see. I believe Ken Rosenthal of The Athletic was the one that had those names. And then at the same time, there's other reporting that the Yankees are closing in on acquiring Cody Bellinger. We don't know exactly how much or exactly what the compensation is. I've heard there's been a little bit of conversations here about maybe it's pitcher Will Warren goes back to the Cubs. And the hangup apparently appears to be how much money the Cubs are going to cover of the $27.5 million salary for Bellinger in 25. And then he has either a $25 million player option or a $5 million buyout for 2026. So if these two deals go through, not knowing what the return is, but assuming it's, you know, Suzuki and Paredes going to Houston, assuming it's Warren going to the Cubs, they get Tucker and the Yankees get Bellinger. Who do you feel like is the winner out of these three teams in this deal?
It's got to be the Cubs, just strictly because of Kyle Tucker. I mean, even with them trading away essentially three major league pieces and receiving one sure thing back in Kyle Tucker, he makes up for the loss of production from Isak Paredes, Seiya Suzuki, and Cody Bellinger combined. And yes, Tucker dealt with a lot of injuries. And as we pointed out a couple times on the show, we don't even know if he has a shin anymore or not. But outside of this year, from 2021 through 2023, he played 140 or more games in all three of those seasons. He played 58 in the 60-game season of 2020. Before that, 2019, he was hurt. In 2018, he was a late-season call-up. So he has, outside of 2024, he has posted for the majority of seasons, and he has a 139 OPS plus across his career. He's not a Yordan Alvarez, but when he did play in 2024, he had a 181 OPS plus, and he had 23 home runs in 78 games. And it's just Kyle Tucker would immediately make the Cubs the winner of both trades from all three teams.
Yeah, I mean, that's a 47 homer, close to 15 stolen base pace for Kyle Tucker. It's not very often you see a dude hit 40 plus home runs and get double digit steals, right? This is a situation. Some of the hangups here, Suzuki has a full no trade clause. Reportedly, he's not looking to be traded. He just wants to play the outfield more. He was DHing a lot last year. Obviously, if you move on from Bellinger, that does open up playing time in the field for Suzuki. Ian Happ still in left. Pete Crow Armstrong still in center. That gives you some right field play. Although it's important to note the reason why the Cubs can look at moving multiple starting outfielders is they have so many high-level outfield prospects. Owen Casey's a big name. Supposed to be a big power corner outfield bat that they want to get into the lineup. So it is, I feel like the Cubs would be the winner here because they're getting the most impact and their payroll commitment should come down from Cody Bellinger's $27.5 million. Really, if you have Bellinger on your roster for 25 because of the buyout, you're committed to paying at least $32.5 million to Cody Bellinger. And getting out from under that deal for a player that is, I would argue, is fine, but is probably not worth that level of contract, I'd argue that's a good thing. And then I do say the Yankees are the team I think that is probably best suited to take on Cody Bellinger simply because they have holes in both center field and first base. Now, are there paths to filling those? Yes, Jason Dominguez in center, Ben Rice at first. But Cody Bellinger gives you a lot more established pedigree than either one of those prospects do and is probably the better route. I do love the fit of Isak Paredes in Houston. I hated when he went to Wrigley. It was like the second worst ballpark for his extreme pull fly ball tendencies. But obviously Houston's one of the best because of the Crawford boxes. And I do think Isak Paredes in Houston would feed families in fantasy baseball. I don't just say that as a guy who owns Isak Paredes in a dynasty league and is excited to maybe get him in that ballpark. They do have obviously openings at third and first with the free agency of Alex Bregman. This would give them flexibility on we don't have to meet Bregman's number. If we can get him back, great. We'll put Paredes at first. If we don't get him back, we'll leave Paredes at third. So I like this deal for all three teams, which I think is kind of surprising. The one thing is if the Yankees make the trade and they move a prospect pitcher and Will Warren instead of one of the arms that they'd be looking to move on from out of the major league rotation, like a Marcus Stroman or a Nestor Cortez, I think that's probably not the best outcome for a Yankee squad that's already traded a ton of prospects in the last couple of years, a ton of pitching prospects, but they do have extra pitchers right now. So it kind of makes sense, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And you kind of touched on it with the Cody Bellinger thing. His batted ball profile fits Yankee Stadium perfectly. Mm-hmm. Out of his 18 home runs in 2024, 15 of them were to right field. And yeah. And then
short porch and right, baby.
Short porch and right. And to bring it back to Kyle Tucker real quick, something that a lot of people don't really notice, and I didn't even really notice until I dug into it, he's one of the slowest players in baseball. He consistently ranks in the bottom half of baseball for speed. In 2023, he stole 30 bases. So he is extremely good at picking his spots. And even though he's not the fastest, he's a smart base runner. And that's pretty valuable to have also.
There's a couple guys like that that from a sprint speed perspective, they're not anything special, but they just kind of understand how to do it. Kyle Tucker is one of those guys. Freddie Freeman is one of those guys. He's not very fast, but he gets good jumps. He understands how to read a pitcher and he runs a lot more than I think that a lot of people think. And like you said, 30 stolen bases for Kyle Tucker. Freddie Freeman's another guy that has some surprising totals. I want to say he stole 23 bags in 2023. Like just a couple of these guys are, they're those well-rounded ball players that their physical tools when it comes to like the speed and the power aren't necessarily mind-blowing on their own, but they just use them really well, right? They really excel at how they do those. And so, yeah, I think people don't talk enough about Kyle Tucker as probably a top 10 player in all of baseball, which feels really extreme, but I mean, he's a top 10 player in all of baseball, and he's probably the quietest one. And I would argue that would be the biggest trade of the offseason, even more so than Garrett Crochet moving to the Red Sox, simply because he is such a good player that is constantly not considered to be that.
Yeah, absolutely. And real quick on the Kyle Tucker, Freddie Freeman stolen base things. Kyle Tucker is listed at 6'4", 212. Freddie Freeman is listed at 6'5", 220. That's some big old boys running at you from first base to second base.
But, I do not want to be trying to get that there. Yeah, no.
Wow. But do you think the Cubs can re-sign him or extend him? Or do you think he's going to free agency in 2025?
That's the hard part, right? If the Cubs make this deal, you're giving up pieces that it's not a salary dump with Paredes, right? Like he has 2 years of team control at reasonable arbitration salaries, but you have to think of it as a 1 year thing, right? And so I would argue the Cubs, you'll be in the driver's seat to re-sign him. You'll have all year to try to do it. I do think he's a Boris client, so the odds are he's not going to want to sign an extension, but you have the inside track to do it. But you have to do more to surround him with guys understanding that this is a 1 year. You're only guaranteed 1 year. It's kind of like the Yankees. You know, they didn't re-sign Juan Soto, but they made a World Series. So you could argue the trade for Juan Soto was successful. In just a minute, we're going to break down the final results of all of those trades and who has who from those deals. But the Cubs, I think you could only assume you get 1 year of Juan Soto, and or, sorry, 1 year of Kyle Tucker. And so they have to focus on doing everything they can to try to make a push to the World Series in that year they have him, hoping that that commitment that they can show is enough to get him to take their money over other players, especially when you don't have Suzuki's contract, you don't have Bellinger on the book still. You should be able to pay for that.
I'm right there with you. It seems like the Cubs are trying to go all in and make some sort of push for 2025. I mean, we've talked about it, how in 2023 and 2024, they finished both years with the same record, but in 2024, they finished one game farther back of the Brewers. So it seems like 2025, they're actually going to try and put a better team together to try and make that push to catch up with the Brewers, or at least a wild card spot. But that's going to be hard with the National League West, the National League East.
Yeah. Okay. So talking about the Juan Soto trade, I want to real quick, it's taken 3 years, but we've seen what every team has after trading for Juan Soto. So of the four teams involved with Juan Soto, let me know who you think is the winner of this. The Mets, they get Juan Soto, right? They'll have Juan Soto for 15 years and $765 million or whatever, could be $800 and change. The Nationals have shortstop C.J. Abrams, left-hand pitcher Mackenzie Gore, outfielder Robert Hassel in their minors, outfielder James Wood in their minors, right-hand pitcher Jarlin Susana in their minors, and first baseman Luke Voit, who I believe is no longer with the organization. The Padres got starter Michael King. They got pitcher Johnny Brito and Drew Thorpe. They got Randy Vasquez and catcher Kyle Higashioka, who just left and signed with the Rangers. The Yankees got a trip to the World Series in 2024 and are left with outfielder Trent Grisham. Looking at all the pieces the Yankees gave up to get Soto and make the World Series, it's still considered a successful trade because they made the World Series, right? Or is this something where before you look at the outcome, you just say you gave up these five players, you got back an outfielder that you still have that you barely played last year, and Juan Soto for a year, and now he's gone, and so it's a failed trade because you didn't re-sign him?
Our regular listeners know, you and I have talked about this, we like to look at things but without the outcome playing a part in whether or not it was good or bad. So at the time of the trade, I think it was still a good trade for the Yankees, because who knew Michael King was going to be an ace caliber pitcher? Yeah. And I mean, outside of Michael King,
the Padres, obviously.
Right, absolutely. Outside of Michael King, I mean, Kyle Higashioka was solid as a catcher. Randy Vasquez was good in the pen, but really, I still think at the time of the trade, the Yankees won that trade just because of Juan Soto.
He's so good. He's generationally good. And then obviously the fact they were able to ride him and Judge of the World Series definitely helps a lot of the public perception of the deal. The Nationals had an extra year of team control that they were giving away for Juan Soto. So they were giving away 2 years of team control. But it's hard to look at that team and think, if they hadn't have made that trade, where would they be now, right? You've got your starting shortstop. You've got one of the stalwarts of your rotation in Mackenzie Gore. You've got another young pitcher in Drolin Susana that can either be in your rotation or your bullpen. I'm not sure where they're going to use him. Two outfielders. Robert Hassel was a high-floor outfielder that struggled a little bit in Washington. James Wood was a low-floor but a high-ceiling outfielder who's also struggled, which we kind of expect. It was a very risky profile. And I say, like, very high-ceiling. He came up last year just under 80 games, so just half the season, right? Batted .264, 9 homers, 97 strikeouts. Like, he's not been great. He's not been terrible. And I do think there is something to build off of there. I think originally I was thinking of Elijah Green and not James Wood. So two starting outfielders. One starting outfielder, another depth outfielder, a fourth or fifth kind of guy. You also have a starting shortstop. You're your number two in your rotation behind Josiah Gray. And then a potential depth bullpen piece in Drolin Susana. Yes, you had an extra year to deal with, but the Nationals definitely made out pretty well. I think it's hard from where we sit for me to say that the Mets are set to be successful given the financial commitment that Juan Soto's going to take. I know the joke is Steve Cohen has unlimited money, but they're paying more for significantly more in present day value for Juan Soto than even Shohei Ohtani's getting. Shohei's deal present value, so not counting the full amount of the deferrals, is like $460 million. They're paying $300 more than that for Juan Soto, granted over 5 more years, but still, it's hard for me to think that, yes, the Mets are going to be able to build a successful team around Juan Soto when he's taken up such a huge part of the payroll now and after essentially the automatic escalator kicks it in 5 seasons where he can opt out and they have to up his salary to make up for it.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. They're going to have in order to continue to be contenders in the National League East, they're going to have to do something else, and they really can't. They can't make any big additions outside of Juan Soto. I mean, they can add some fringe guys and some depth guys, but they need a lot more than that if they want to actually be contenders in the National League East.
Now, I think part of it, I think we can kind of acknowledge the payroll from last year to this year. They're still $80 million behind where the payroll was last year, right? Like, they can add. This is something where, like, Juan Soto's guaranteed salary in 2025, according to the Fangraphs, is $61.875 million. And it's just, it kind of blows my mind how large these payroll figures are. And they've got issues. Like, they'll have some money freeing up. Starling Marte is on the final year of his deal. He's owed $20.75 million. There's rumors that they're going to pay some of that down to move him to somewhere else. They've got 2 years left of Jeff McNeil on a terribly timed option at $15.75 million. But it just, you've got so many expensive players, right? Francisco Lindor, $34 million a year for through 2031. Brandon Nimmo, $20.5 million a year through 2030. It just feels, Edwin Diaz at $18.5 million through 2027. And so it feels like they're in a situation not as bad as the Cubs, but they've got a lot of guys on the roster that are either highly paid or pretty decent. And so it's going to be hard to replace them with better guys on the diamond. Their path has to be the rotation, which they can't be done with the rotation and genuinely think that they can contend. Kodai Senga, Frankie Montas, David Peterson, Clay Holmes, Paul Blackburn does not scare anybody in October.
No, especially not in the National League East. Most of their games are going to come against the National League East. They're going to have to face Ronald Acuna Jr., Matt Olson, Austin Riley, Marcelo Zuna, Bryce Harper, Kyle Schwarber, potentially Nick Castellanos if he doesn't get moved, Alec Bohm if he doesn't get moved, Bryson Stott, who won't have an elbow injury in 2025, James Wood, C.J. Abrams, Dylan Cruz, Robert Hassel maybe. Not Jake Berger. He's a Ranger. But the list goes on.
There's nobody for the Marlins to even throw out there, right?
Right.
I mean, we're not scared of Connor Norby. Shout out Connor Norby. But speaking of the division, I got an email from a sports book giving me the odds opened on Thursday afternoon for the divisions, the pennants, and the National League East odds. Atlanta Braves, when the lines opened, plus 150, so 3-2 odds. The New York Mets, 8-5 odds, so plus 160. And the Philadelphia Phillies, 11-5 odds and plus 220. What is more likely, that the Mets don't finish second, but they finish third, or that the Phillies try to contrive some sort of grievance out of this too to fire themselves up to actually play baseball in 2025?
I think that both things can be true. I think that the Phillies can plant a reporter in the locker room to get a scoop to fire them up for next season. And that I don't think the Mets are finishing in second place in the division. I do agree that the Braves are the favorites to win the division because I've said it multiple times. Ronald Acuna Jr. and Spencer Strider are not going to be injured for the entirety of the season. And right. Matt Olson's not going to be in the biggest slump of his career. And if Marcelo Zuna can do 75% of what he did in 2024, plus Austin Riley being healthy, that's one of the scariest lineups in baseball, hands down. And
never mind whatever happens at even with Orlando Arcia at shortstop, right? Like, it doesn't matter. If everybody else is, look at 2023. If everybody else is hitting, it doesn't matter what he does in the ninth hole, right?
And I haven't even mentioned Ozzie Albies. And so it's
Michael Harris.
Michael Harris. Yeah. And
Sean Murphy. I mean,
Yeah. It's the Braves. I can see the Braves being the favorites to win the division. The Mets being the second favorite is 100% based off of hype and trying to get people's money because of the Juan Soto signing. They will not finish second in the division. They are going to finish third at best, finish third. The Nationals could make a run for third. I don't know if they'll get it, but they could make a run with what they're putting together. But the Phillies are finishing second in the division or better.
Yeah. So Braves, Mets, Phillies, Nationals, Marlins was the betting odds for the East. But when you get to the National League pennant, this was interesting to me. Dodgers, the favorite, duh. I mean, 9-4 odds, plus 225. Yeah, no, we get that. That's going to be like that for the next 5 years. After that, the New York Mets have the second best odds of winning the National League with the Braves. Like, they're at 15-4. The Braves are at 5-1 and the Phillies are at 6-1. Does it surprise you that the Mets are projected to come in second in the division, but win the National League over the Braves and Phillies? Or is that just, do you think that's another thing where that could legitimately happen out of the wild card, or is that another, we're just trying to get money from New Yorkers who are hyped about Juan Soto?
I think it's 100% trying to get money from New Yorkers because, again, look at the Mets rotation right now. That is not a playoff rotation. You can't take that rotation into the playoffs and expect to make it to the National League Championship Series, much less win it against the Dodgers, who have Freddie Freeman, Shohei Ohtani, Mookie Betts, and the list goes on and on with their lineup. If the Dodgers are even the team to make it, it could be one of the Dodgers, Braves, or Phillies, or even the Padres, because while the playoffs are a crapshoot, you still have to have a good pitching rotation in order to make it a little bit far, and the Mets ain't got that. This isn't the American League, where the American League is a much worse league than the National League across the board, and the Yankees can kind of coast by to the World Series. Like, you got to actually have a good rotation and a good lineup. And while the Mets have part of a good lineup, they do not have a good rotation.
Yeah. Fun fact, the Padres are actually fifth on that list behind the Phillies at 15-2, so plus 750. Although there are rumors out there that they are listening on a potential trade of Dylan Cease, another Boris client entering his final year of team control. He is from the Atlanta area, so we'll be interested to see if that happens for Atlanta. Other possible trades to worry about, we talked about a playoff rotation. Seattle's rotation's one of the best in baseball. Their starters had the best ERA in baseball, if I remember this correctly, barely beating out Atlanta. Supposedly, Luis Castillo is a guy that is getting a lot of trade calls about. Acquired from Cincinnati in July 2022, signed a longer-term deal, but everybody else is pretty young, right? They're all first-round picks, they're all picks by the Mariners, who are still, like, just now, I think Logan Gilbert just reached arbitration. George Kirby's not arbitration eligible yet. Bryce Miller, Brian Wu were under 2 years of team control. And so they're getting calls about Luis Castillo. Curious to see what happens there because he's got some really interesting home road splits. But I don't want to waste time. I want to have time to talk about this last thing. If you Google Mike Elias, general manager of the Baltimore Orioles, the first article that comes up in Google News was a freelance article that you wrote for Sports Illustrated talking about a report that came out on Thursday morning in Pitcher List, which is a fantasy baseball focused outlet, talking about Mike, per an anonymous source close to the front office, Mike Elias is unwilling to spend significant amounts of money in free agency this offseason. Something where, despite a new owner and David Rubenstein, who has given permission to open the purse strings and get involved in free agency, Elias wants to build a team internally and kind of prove that you don't have to do something like the Yankees and the Dodgers and sign big name free agents just to win. If this is true, and this is not the type of story that Pitcher List has normally broken, we have no reason to doubt that it's true, but there's also been nobody else who's been able to come over the top of this and confirm the allegations in the article. If this is true, how mad should Orioles fans be that you could potentially waste a generational core because your general manager refuses to sign premier free agents?
Oh, they should be pissed because they took a step back in 2024 from where they were in 2023. What was it? 10 more games they lost, exactly 10, I think, from in 2024 over 2023. And like you said, their core right now, it's a generational core with Adley Rutschman, Gunnar Henderson, Ryan O'Hearn, Ryan Mountcastle. If Jackson Holliday can find his footing in the majors, then he's going to be a solid piece.
And Kobe Mayo is a master at the corner infield. Yeah.
Colton Cowser. Like, it's just the list goes on and on. Yeah. And it's just, it's a long list of guys that they have grown in their farm system and have developed, but you still have to add those pieces from the outside in order to take that next step. You can't just bank on all of these guys hitting. It's an insane rate that they have had their prospects hit at. You don't ever see that. And fun fact, Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson were taken in the same draft in the first and second round by the Baltimore Orioles. And both of them have hit. And it's just, if I was a Baltimore Orioles fan and I saw this, I'd be very mad because you're not going to get Corbin Burns if you're not going to spend.
Yeah, this is something where you look at this rotation, Kyle Bradish down for Tommy John in June. Tyler Wells had the internal brace for a UCL injury in June. Obviously, you know, you lost Corbin Burns to free agency. And so it's like, it's Grayson Rodriguez, it's Zach Eflin. And then after that, you know, Dean Kramer, Albert Suarez, Trevor Rogers, like nothing. And still was a ton of confidence there outside of that top two. And even that top two, Eflin struggled a bit. Grayson was injured last year and has struggled a bit. Both those guys had ERAs in the high threes. And I remember getting, back when I had the prospect show, Locked On MLB Prospects, I remember getting very mad at the 23 trade deadline. And I went on a rant that the network actually clipped and made into reels and stuff about how you can't just take a competitive window for granted. You can't sit back and say, well, we're ahead of schedule, so we don't have to, like, it's fine if we don't win it this year. We're going to have four or five more bites at the apple. And a lot of the feedback I got from Orioles fans was, you can't tear down the farm for a one-year chance to win a World Series. And I wasn't arguing to do that. But what the Orioles have done is be very conservative in free agency, very conservative at the trade deadline, and not aggressive enough at trying to either extend their young talent before they get super pricey, retaining their veteran talent before they go to free agency. Anthony Santander, you know, they traded for Corbin Burns. Big deal to trade for Corbin Burns. That was a big trade. But 1 year and they let him walk, and it doesn't look like they're going to re-sign him. And so, like, their big ads so far, they added Tyler O'Neill. And, like, that's okay. That's great. That's not moving the needle for you in the American League East. Not with the Red Sox getting Garrett Crochet. Not with the Yankees just signing Max Fried to the largest guaranteed deal for a lefty, right? You added Tyler O'Neill and Gary Sanchez as a backup catcher. Great. That's not enough. And if this article is correct, and again, we have no reason to assume it's not, there's nothing that makes me think the Orioles are going to go out and sign more players. And all that you're going to end up doing is watching Adley Rutschman walk in 3 years and watch Gunnar Henderson walk in 4 years because you insisted on trying on this vanity project of building a team entirely out of a farm system without signing premier free agents. And virtually nobody who has won a World Series has done that. Even some of the classic underdog scrappy teams like those Royals teams in the 2010, even they had veteran adds to their roster. And besides now, it's been a decade. It's a different league now. It's just, this has got to be frustrating for Orioles fans. I was hoping the new owner would mean things are different. And if this story is to be believed, it's not different because the GM is still the same. And Mike Elias is personally going to risk this competitive window out of his own personal pride.
Right. And our biggest issue with a lot of things this offseason and over the past few months has been with owners that don't want to spend money to upgrade their team. And that's not the case here. It's not the owners that's not wanting to spend money. According to this report, it's the GM that's not wanting to spend the owner's money. And it's not his
money. It's not even your money. Spend it.
It's like I you and I, obviously, as the people can tell from the past few minutes, we're frustrated about this, and we're not even Orioles fans. We're just frustrated for the Orioles fans because it makes no sense. If they're standing still, they're getting passed by multiple teams in the American League East because every single team in the American League East is doing things to improve their roster this offseason so that they can be competitive in 2025.
Even you can't just be stagnant. Even Toronto's trying to sign guys. They're trying to be better. The Tampa Bay Rays, they're in a weird situation because of the ballpark thing and the low revenues already. But like the Red Sox just traded for Crochet. The Yankees just signed Fried. They're not done. We just talked in this show. They're trying to get Bellinger. Baltimore has the second best odds to win the East. 2-1. The Yankees are ahead of them at 6-5. The Red Sox are behind them at 5-1 instead of 2-1. I honestly think the Red Sox have a better shot at finishing second than the Orioles do simply because I trust the Red Sox to keep adding and keep addressing deficiencies on this roster. I don't trust the Orioles to keep adding anything of note in this offseason, and that rotation's not going to be enough. And I hate it for you Orioles fans. I hate it for you guys so much. It's also going to be really frustrating. What's going to happen is the Nationals are going to draft Ethan Holliday. You're going to watch him in a Beltway series take on his brother. And then Jackson's going to leave in free agency at this rate. Like, it's just, I know it's 5-6 years from now, but it's just frustrating where the Orioles are compared to where they could be.
Right. Absolutely. And back to the two additions that they have added, Tyler O'Neill is perennially injured. They're paying him like $15 million a year. He's probably going to be on the injured list for the majority of the time that he's under contract with them because he has played 100 or more games twice in his career. I actually wrote a little article about that today. And he's 100 or more games twice in his career. Go ahead.
Did we talk about Tyler O'Neill getting $50 million over 3 seasons?
I don't think y'all did.
$16.5 million a year. What are we doing here?
And here's the thing. There's an opt-out after 2025. But with Tyler O'Neill's injury history, there's no way he exercises that opt-out because he's going to be hurt for all of 2025. And Gary Sanchez isn't going to play. Like, Adley Rutschman is built of the same cloth that JT Realmuto is. Adley Rutschman is a catcher that starts 140-plus games a year. So Gary Sanchez might start 20 games at catcher at most, and then his other option is DH and first base. Those guys don't need days off because they're DHs and first basemen. Like,
Rutschman played 148 games last year. He started right. he played in 103 behind the plate, and the rest were DH. So yeah, okay. he sat out. So you could assume that Gary's going to get 30 or 40 starts. Is that worth $8.5 million?
$8.5 million to play in 30? No, especially with the lack of production that he's going to give you. He's not the same Gary Sanchez that he was in the early 2010s. Like, he's not even popular anymore. Like, it's not even a popularity signing at this point. Like, it doesn't make sense, man. And I don't get it.
Well, it's a lot of us not understanding what the heck's going on today. This has been First Pitch.
Story of our life.
For a spooky Friday the 13th. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a 5-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell. Either way, tell your friends, go to firstpitchpodcast.com to get their daily MLB recaps every single weekday morning. It goes live at 3 a.m. Eastern on audio, 7 a.m. Eastern on YouTube. Until next time. This has been First Pitch.